Hey everyone, and welcome back to the forum where science comes to socialize. Before we get started, let me remind everyone that you can access the forum anytime you'd like on Twitter by tweeting at ISGP Forum or on Facebook by searching ISGP's The Forum. We love any and all of your social media interactions, so don't be shy. But anyways, I'm Cleo, and with me today, as usual, are Aubrey and Daniela.
Hey guys, Daniela here, and I'm super excited for today's episode as we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, food.
Hey everyone, it's Aubrey, and I think it's safe to say that all of us at the Institute on Science for Global Policy are pretty into food, seeing as one of our primary conference series revolves around the very subject.
Very true. What Aubrey is referring to is ISGP's FSSD series, which stands for Food Safety, Security, and Defense. The debate we'll be discussing today falls under the FSSD category, as well as our Academic Partnership Series category, where we basically hold conferences with undergraduate and community involvement, but that's another story for another day.
Today's episode is also exciting because the debate in question took place at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida. Fun fact, Eckerd College is my alma mater, and it's Cleo's too. What I would give to be back on those sunny, sandy Florida beaches now instead of stuck in the middle of a London winter.
I couldn't agree with you more there, Dee. I'm experiencing my very first Virginia winter, or winter in general, I guess, and I'd very much like the sun and blue sky back now, please.
Well, while you all continue to sulk over the weather, I'm just going to be over here getting us started on this episode. So today, we'll be discussing the topics of food security, food safety, food waste, and ultimately, how we can feed the world's estimated year 2050 population of 9 billion people. You know, super simple stuff.
Right. Well, the debate we're recapping features Rachel Goldstein's policy position paper titled Value Chain Efficiency and Sustainable Production, The Role of Uncommon Collaboration. Ms. Goldstein is the Global Sustainability Manager of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs at Mars Incorporated.
And yes, we mean Mars as in the chocolate company. But while they're probably best known for M&Ms, it turns out they're pretty into sustainability too. Oh, and by the way, this paper can be found on the ISGP website, scienceforglobalpolicy.org, if you're interested in some light reading.
And this conference took place on April 24th and 25th, 2015, at probably the best place in Florida, if you ask me.
But potentially the best place on Earth, if you ask me.
All right, we get it. You loved your college. Can we start talking about food security now?
Right, sorry. In today's discussion, we're going to give you a rundown of food waste, talk about how food safety is tied into the subject, and how sustainable business practices can play a huge role in food security.
So even though we talk about food safety and security a lot on the forum, the distinguishing factor in this episode will be a focus on corporate practices and the role of food businesses.
Nonetheless, let's kick off with the definition of food security, just so we're all on the same page here.
Great idea. Food security, as defined by the FAO, or Food and Agriculture Organization of the United States, quote, exists when all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food, which meets their dietary needs and food preferences for an active and healthy life. So basically, having enough food to not only live, but live a healthy and productive life.
Unsurprisingly, achieving a condition of food security is no easy task. With global population increases, not only is the demand for food increasing, but the demand for more varied food sources is also on the rise. This includes more resource-intensive foods like meat and dairy.
And here in the US and in other more affluent nations, it turns out we need to accept more responsibility for this trend than those in less affluent nations. These nations set the precedent, in a way, for what is considered a desirable diet. If individuals in more affluent nations create a demand for more resource-intensive foods, this in turn causes individuals in less affluent nations to emulate their more affluent counterparts.
So if we start demanding more red meat, one of the least sustainable items we could put on our plates, then people in other countries will most likely start demanding the same.
And as an example, consider China's demand for beef in an attempt to emulate a more American diet. In this sense, many believe we have a responsibility to take it upon ourselves to make more sustainable food choices.
Something we might not have as much control over, though, is a demand for more diverse food supplies.
You say that, though, like seeking a diversified diet is a bad thing. Why would it be? Wouldn't this mean that there'd be a better chance that your food is nutritionally fulfilling?
Sure, and many dietitians do in fact recommend diversified diets, but we also have to keep in mind that this demand would require more food to be imported, as one region can only support the growth of so much food and only of certain crops.
And if food is being imported, that means someone has to be growing it for that purpose, as opposed to growing food for an immediate community or family's consumption.
Which could definitely become an issue, especially in less affluent countries where a lot of food must be self-produced.
Speaking of big issues, one of the biggest challenges facing the modern food industry is environmental sustainability, something to which the debaters devoted a decent amount of time.
Research performed by intercompany or corporate academia partnerships is currently ongoing regarding increasing crop yields on existing land, as opposed to clearing more land for agricultural use. This could decrease deforestation threats and improve the livelihoods of suppliers.
Researchers are also working hard on figuring out ways to decrease water usage and generate less methane and nitrogen dioxide during food production.
The debaters also brought up controversial growing practices, such as monocultures, and their impacts on environmental sustainability. They suggested that perhaps alternative growing methods, such as intercropping, need to be more widely explored and utilized.
Okay, now that we have that background info out of the way, let's delve into the real meat of Ms. Goldstein's paper, food waste.
Punny, I see what you did there.
Wait, what did I do?
We were talking about meat consumption and food waste.
Oh, that, yeah, I totally meant to do that.
Now, we have talked about food waste a few times before on the forum, but this topic is so important that it really does deserve the added attention. In 2011, the FAO estimated that roughly 33% of all food produced ends up being wasted. That's like dividing your plate or bowl into thirds for every meal and taking enough food just to make sure that one of those thirds goes straight into the trash.
What's even worse is that some estimates put this food waste figure as high as 50%, or up to 2 billion tons of food wasted per year. This waste, as noted by the World Economic Forum, represents massive inefficiencies for all stakeholders along the value chain in terms of water, energy, land use, and calories.
Where is this waste coming from, you may ask? Well, you can break the answer up into two overarching categories. According to Ms. Goldstein's position paper, losses in the developing world are mainly attributed to the absence of food chain infrastructure and lack of knowledge or investment in appropriate food storage technologies.
So take India, for example. In India, it's estimated that 35 to 40% of fresh produce is lost because neither wholesale nor retail outlets have cold storage. 40%. Just because of a lack of refrigeration. And if we're not worrying about keeping the food cold, which would of course be the case with a product like rice or something, then we still have to be concerned about things like pests or spoilage, which, by the way, can claim up to one-third of the annual rice harvest in Southeast Asia.
Now, in more affluent countries, it's a little bit of a different story. Most of the food chain losses, by contrast, are seen at the retail, food service, and consumer stages. According to the Natural Resource Defense Council, in-store food losses in the U.S. amount to 10% of the total food supply at the retail level. In 2008, that was 43 billion pounds of wasted food.
But how could this much waste possibly be happening, you may wonder? Let's look at a small example to get an idea of just one of the many reasons so much food is wasted. Take the sell by, use by, and best by labels on food, for instance. Okay, guys, what do you do if you see use by April 8th, 2017 on your cheese?
Well, I mean, I'd say no thank you, cheese is gross, but that's probably not the popular opinion.
I'd say it doesn't matter. Cheese is amazing no matter how old it is.
Okay, admittedly, that was my fault for choosing what is apparently a highly polarized food. But how about we set our opinions of cheese aside just for a moment for the sake of learning and the legitimacy of our podcast?
Fine, I'd assume that I would want to eat the cheese by that date and probably get rid of it afterwards.
I guess I can agree with that.
Okay, what if instead the cheese label read, sell by April 8th?
Well, I think that means the stores have to get it off their shelves by that date, but I'm really not sure where that leaves me as the consumer.
Maybe that it's the highest quality by that date, but then declines after?
But then wouldn't that be the best buy date?
Not if it has a sell by and best buy date on it.
Wait, then what would best buy mean in that case?
Obviously, that you should probably use it by that date.
But then what does use by mean?
All right, let's take it down a notch, you two. The point is, you can probably see and understand the confusion circulating amongst consumers with all of these labels. In fact, these arbitrary and confusing dates are a leading cause of waste in the consumer sphere.
And let's just be real. I'm going to eat the cheese no matter what label is on there. But back to things that are relevant. To make matters worse, it's actually more economically advantageous for food producers and processors to dismiss products as waste if consumers aren't likely to accept them anyway. A classic example of this is bruised, blemished, or otherwise ugly fruit.
Corporate entities are partially to blame for this extreme selectivity exhibited by consumers. If advertisements continue to employ the perfect product model based almost solely on the food's appearance in their ad campaigns, then duh, consumers will keep expecting perfect products.
But herein lies a potential solution that relies on cooperation of the business sphere. If corporate entities just use their influence over consumer preferences to create markets for blemished products, then we no longer have to abandon these foods.
Sellers could also play a huge role in decreasing waste by educating customers on the true meanings of those pesky sell by, use by, and best by labels.
And to clarify, since I know we left you hanging before and you're totally dying to know their true meanings, drum roll, please. Okay, in an article online, Dr. Bob Brackett from the Institute for Food Safety and Health says that sell-by is a date just for food retailers, telling them when the food producer says the product should be removed from their shelves if not purchased.
So the food's probably not safe to consume at that point, right?
Wrong. Typically, about one-third of the product's shelf life remains after the sell-by date. Think about it. If a sell-by was the deadline for safely eating the food, why would anyone buy the food on that day?
Oh, so the one-third remaining shelf life is time that the purchaser has to actually eat the food. That actually does make sense.
Yeah, so next we have use by. This one is aimed at the consumer, and it tells you when the product should be eaten for maximum product quality. In most cases, the food is still safe to eat after this point, but its goodness is said to be lessened, and maybe its safety has decreased.
What about Best Buy then?
Turns out that's essentially the same as the use-by date, a date marker for the point at which food quality will begin to decrease.
Well, I never.
I don't know what emotion this is that I'm feeling right now, but it's something akin to being lied to by a very close friend, my very favorite food.
Currently, inefficiencies resulting from labeling issues are being examined by organizations such as the Food Waste Reduction Alliance, a consortium comprised of the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Food Marketing Institute, and American Restaurant Association. These groups examine how dates printed on packages affect purchasing and decide how wasted food can actually be repurposed.
And it's not all just about the corporations or overseeing organizations. Consumers have some influence in this as well. The debaters believed that adoption of sustainable business practices can actually be influenced by consumers, since security and sustainability impact the quality, type, and cost of food to which consumers have access.
A real-life example brings us to a particular grocery store in England that began labeling its products that were received via ship versus airplane. The data collected from this store suggested that consumers changed their purchasing habits to more frequently select ship-transported foods, which have a smaller environmental impact than airplane-transported foods.
It's important to note in this discussion as well that it's almost impossible to talk about food waste without also considering food safety. After all, if food isn't safe to eat, then it has to be discarded. And of course, this discarded unsafe food accounts for a decent amount of waste as well.
For example, it's estimated that 25% of all staple food crops are contaminated by fungal toxins, meaning they'll most likely never even make it out of the fields.
Probably one of the most critical challenges in food security, though, isn't strictly food waste. It's ensuring that food is nutritious. While processed foods have served as a solution to food insecurity in the past, since they have high availability and minimal storage requirements, we're now concerned that processed foods of the future should be held to a higher nutritional standard.
Oh God, I'm getting all sorts of Soylent Green images in my head when you say processed foods of the future.
Oh, don't be so dramatic. Anyway, some ways that nutritional concerns about processed foods could be addressed include food companies limiting serving sizes, reducing a product's sodium content, and eliminating trans fats from their products.
Also, packaging could play a major role here. Improved packaging is an opportunity to maintain the nutritional content and safety of potentially more nutritious processed foods.
This is the kind of thing that is easier said than done, though.
I mean, when does anything we say on this show not fall under that category?
Guys, stop. You're being pessimistic again.
Good point. And this time, the debaters gave us some ammo for packaging solutions, so I'm going to continue explaining this.
Fair enough.
So, for packaging, the challenge lies in striking a balance between saving food from becoming wasted and wasting other resources in the process of trying to create more effective packaging.
As a result, it's necessary to develop practices that minimize packaging waste, while also allowing for recyclability and minimal use of resources.
Additionally, individual food products and dietary guidelines need to encourage consumers to voluntarily adopt a more environmentally sustainable diet.
And how are we going to do that?
Well, the debaters discussed how reductions in food waste could be incentivized by campaigns that seek to induce a change in consumer perspective.
Sorry, I'm struggling to see how perspective fits into this conversation and solution. What I'm picturing right now is people trying to put themselves in the perspective of the half a PB&J that they threw away, and imagining the abandonment and loneliness that sandwich may be experiencing.
Well, apparently the PB&J wouldn't be too lonely, considering the huge amount of other foods wasted as well.
Oh, true.
No, guys, what? Never mind, I'm not even going to entertain that thought. What I mean is that something like the absence of trays in cafeterias could, and has actually been proven to, discourage people from taking food that they might not eat. Restaurants charging customers for unfinished food could also have a similar effect.
Oh, okay. That change of perspective makes much more sense.
Or, you know, any sense at all, but whatever. Labeling could also get a makeover to encourage consumers to make more environmentally sustainable choices. For instance, sustainability labels on products could indicate how much water, energy, and transport distance is required to bring a product to market.
And these labels could in turn become a positive marketing strategy for companies.
And shifting the solution from the seller to the producer, another solution is for governments to offer support for infrastructural developments on farms in order to reduce the amount of waste occurring during production.
Likewise, we can put pressure on food production and processing companies to examine their product portfolios and develop ways to decrease the environmental impacts of generating said products.
The debater suggested that companies need to be penalized for creating large quantities of food waste. This also includes cases in which unsafe foods result in widespread product recalls.
Penalizing a company for a safety recall seems risky, though. It could even disincentivize the issuing of a recall in the first place, even if one is warranted.
You're not wrong there. Taxation, therefore, may be a better way of attempting to control companies' wasteful practices. In essence, food companies could be taxed in order to limit the amount of carbon used or generated.
Establishing such taxes is no walk in the park. This would take some really careful planning to ensure that this action doesn't become regressive, or, in other words, take a proportionally greater amount from those with lower incomes.
All right, so we do have a lot going on here between sustainability, food waste, food safety, nutrition. How do we prioritize all of these factors when it comes to food security?
Well, at least in terms of sustainable development, our debaters seem to think that local sustainability priorities often need to be addressed before global concerns. Important considerations for local priorities include impacts on water and land specifically.
And further prioritizing requires that a hierarchy of environmental concerns be delineated, as different products impact the environment in different ways. Growth of soybeans, for instance, releases an exorbitant amount of greenhouse gases, but other crops use an exorbitant amount of water.
And this is where it can get sticky, because while greenhouse gas generation is a global issue and therefore deemed high priority, decreasing greenhouse gas emissions could come at the cost of depleting excess water. If this occurs in an area where water is scarce, then the local water concerns have to come first.
I can definitely see this type of prioritizing becoming a challenge. Another really big challenge includes regulations for and enforcement of all the improvements and changes to the food system we've been discussing today.
For sure. As it stands, diverse enforcement and regulatory standards result in varying levels of control for food safety and sustainability in different markets, which is not ideal.
Because food safety, quality, and sustainability regulations are not standardized globally and their enforcement is variable, it was suggested that both need to be more uniform to facilitate the creation of partnerships between large companies and growers in less affluent regions. These partnerships underpin streamlined, efficient trade.
Such partnerships have a lot of potential benefits, but require the establishment of strict import quality control standards. Governments need to establish these regulatory standards transparently, providing opportunity for industry and public comment.
Where global regulatory standards for food trade do exist, they need to be reassessed on a regular basis to continue reflecting changes in the international food system.
Unfortunately, though, it's about time for us to wrap things up. I guess we'll leave these latter points up to you to ponder. Report back to us, though. We talked about a lot of stuff today, which just means there's more for you to discuss with us on Twitter.
How would you suggest food security issues be prioritized?
Who should oversee this prioritization? Can existing governing bodies and other organizations be of assistance, or do new ones need to be created?
And of course, would you eat the cheese in your fridge even after the Best Buy date on the label has passed?
Well, they'd better after our conversation today. Anyway, make sure to tweet us any questions or comments you may have at ISGPForum and use the hashtag ISGPForum. And as always, you can catch us on our Facebook page as well.
Just type in ISGPs of the Forum in the search bar and we'll pop right up.
We hope to chat with all of you soon. Thanks so much for socializing with science today, everyone. We'll catch you next time right here on the Forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.